Thank you very much. Well, thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for your warm welcome. Let me tell you to start with that anything that you hear from my mouth about my attendance, regular attendance, which has been regular attendance for a very long time in this meeting, and my service work and that sort of thing, I've been the recipient of a wonderful life. I don't know what I've offered to anybody else, but I've been the recipient of a healthy, wholesome life of many friendships and relationships that would not exist apart from AA and Al-Anon. It would be impossible apart from Al-Anon and my life here with all of you, and my life with all the Al-Anon people I've known since the beginning. My name is Dee. I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon, Al-Ateen. When I came here, I was desperate. I felt hopeless. I was a bride. And I want to start with invite you to revisit the era that we are talking about. This is the late 40s and early 50s. We're talking about right now, 1951, when I started looking for help as a bride. This is post-World War II. Troops were coming home, many of them leaning on alcohol, self-medication, really, because of the trauma they had experienced. And this is how I ended up getting hooked up with one, because I never... So I found out about some of that. It was also at a time when alcoholism was not alcoholism. It was just drunkenness, just excessive drinking. The disease of alcoholism was not declared until 10, 12, more like 12, 14 years later in the early 60s. When the American Medical Association declared that it was a disease. So you can see the stigma that, maybe if your imagination is good enough, you can see the stigma that was there, existing in families, in communities, in churches, in every role in society. And the drunk was pretty much the leper of the day, if you want to put it like that, because they were not, they were looked down upon. And certainly I did not need to be mixed up with one. Because I probably did him more damage than anybody else, but I did not know that. When I first went to look for help, I went to my minister, who said, I have never had any experience with dealing, any success in dealing with the people that drank too much in my congregations. Do you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous? And I had seen a heard a documentary on radio So at least I could say yes. And I had heard that there was one businessman in Roanoke. But I did it anyway. And when I left his office, I knew what the problem was, but I knew what the solution was. But I didn't know how to get it from there to the one who needed it. So that took some time and effort, but trouble with the law took care of that. Eventually that happened. I can't take any credit for anything that good had happened. I don't believe. I did go to some meetings with him. I went down to the group. It was not an Al-Anon group. It was not Al-Anon meeting, of course, because it was called an auxiliary to AA. And what they did was really discuss what had happened at home between last week and this week. And we got the reputation of being those women in the back room that served up roast husbands. Of course, they were facetious about it, and they... But they really did think we were talking about them. And I had been taught that you never discuss family business with anybody else. And so, and I was too scared to speak up. You won't believe this because most of you know me. I eventually lost that shyness, but at least some of it. But I was too frightened to hear my own voice for a very long time. But I went to those meetings for that first year of pretty much the full year of 1952, because when I'd started, he went back out and I didn't go for a few months. But I went back until I was pregnant with our first child and showing, and I couldn't stand the way those old geezers looked at me when I go down there to a meeting. And to me, they were old geezers because they were all old, and all the people in the auxiliary were old, and I was young. We were the youngest people in the program, and they were the AA people were telling Bud he was too young to be an alcoholic. And that of course frightened me, but it made me angry because I thought that he gave him a good excuse to bring some more. Which he did, but wasn't their fault. But he got sober before our baby came. I had two babies on my hands at that point. We had for the next few years, we had some critical illness in the family, along with another child. And I didn't go. He was out of town most of the time. I did not go back to the meetings. And somewhere along the line, it got transitioned into the name Al-Anon, but it was not pretty much only in name. Our first book came out in 55, and Bud went to the International. He was sober, and let me tell you that he was sober. He got sober then. He was sober at his death, 53 years. So this program works, and I did want to tell you that. I lost my train of thought. This is what you get for dealing with a 98-year-old brain. It may not fully function for very long. So bear with me, I'll pick it up in a minute. It transitioned into Al-Anon. Now, when the book came out, he brought the book home from the International to me, and I read it, and I sent it on to, the next time he was making a 12-step call, I sent it to somebody who needed it, and she didn't send it back, but she never came to a meeting. So I don't know what happened to that one. Something transpired. Now, this is, I think, had an important impact on our respective programs. In the early days, the two programs were pretty much enmeshed. There was very little separation. We did not have traditions for a long time, for a while. And when we got them, we didn't practice them because we didn't know what they meant. We did have steps. We didn't have the concepts until 1969, I think, 70. I was out at the conference at that time and got to vote on them. But someone came to an AA Al-Anon couple. She was the host of a TV show. She had a daily show, morning show that lasted an hour every morning, and she did, you know, interesting topics. And she came to this AA Al-Anon couple, and she said, we need to educate people about this thing, this drinking problem that exists. Would you help me? Would you think about a program that we could line up? And that was an invitation for some of the first, as I understand it, some of the first public information service. A program, a week's program, 5 1-hour programs were designed to approach the disease problem of alcoholism from the standpoint of business, the clergy, medicine, AA, and Al-Anon. The first speaker was a businessman who came here. Well, to start off with, they had an open AA and Al-Anon meeting. We had an ice cream social, and everybody was invited to meet the Al-Anon speaker. That was a good thing because there was a good turnout of us who went to that. But this person who came to speak from a business standpoint, of course, was a member of AA, but he presented the problem from the perspective of business. So did the doctor. He and his wife had one of the first treatment centers in the country from Georgia. The clergy, he was also a recovering person in the program. but nobody knew they were members. Then there was the AA speaker and then the Al-Anon speaker, both of course, who had their backs to the camera. That, you know, that effort, I think, put, strengthened what educated a lot of people. It took away a little of the stigma of drinking. It was close to the time that it became known as a disease. And it put some real life into both the AA movement and the Al-Anon group. We were the only group at that time. So never underestimate what a little PR work will do. What an outside agency can do in helping us. And whenever we have a chance of getting a little public information spread around, let's take advantage of it. But that really did put a boost in it here, and it was at that time that Lois and Ann were, and we in Virginia, we had two people in Northern Virginia and one person in Danville who said that we should become more structured in our area. And working with Lois and Ann, we at area level began to come together in thought and purpose to spread the message, and we sent our first delegate to World Service. We had our first World Service meeting in New York, and Margaret from Northern Virginia was our first delegate. Earl from Richmond was our second, and yours truly was our third. it was the effort of all the people when we started working together that the message began to spread. We can't do it in isolation. I think our higher power did not create us to live in isolation. He created us to live in community and to work together and to learn to love and serve one another. And I don't know whether you've got your new forum or not, but there's an article in there that my Al-Anon reader just read to me this week from someone who had been to the IAGSM, which is comparable to our World Service Conference, but it's in Europe, and who said that Al-Anon is growing faster in other countries than it is here. So we are not doing our job here. We're resting too comfortably and not getting the message out. But it starts with us as individuals. And I'm getting off soapbox, which is not a good thing. But it's when we begin sharing with other groups, taking our meeting from our group, central group, we would get in the car with AA people because we traveled with them, because they were the ones that had the money for gas. They're the ones that had the cars. Which most of us didn't, but we would pile in the cars and we would go to Stanton or Charlottesville or Danville and give them a meeting. They in turn would come to us to give us a meeting. And this is how we operated for a long time, to strengthen our own groups and get to know each other and to spread the message of our program. Our literature began to be printed. We didn't have anything to work from. We had one article eventually that was Lois's story. But how many meetings can you have on one piece of literature? We used everything that was spiritual. I remember having a meeting on the Lord's Prayer, if you can imagine that, at an Al-Anon meeting. But it was spiritual, and it was accepted. Anytime there was an article in the news media, it was brought and discussed because there was some information about this awful scourge that was going on in our society that was taking the lives of the people we loved. It's hard to imagine how it was. I was fortunate to go to the International in Toronto in 1965. And it was there that I got a glimpse of the magnificence of this program, both AA and Al-Anon, because we had some people from abroad at that point. We had people, we had thousands of people there together, and there was sobriety. There was healing of relationships. There was family restoration, demonstrations, family restoration. And I could see it as one of the greatest movements of the 20th century, which it has turned out to be. We are so blessed to just have a little part of this wonderful program. Because there is hope for so many. We begin to grow in the area, not only locally, but spread out through the state. We divided the state into 5 sections, and then eventually we in 13 or something like that. We started having a meeting assemblies twice a year, and people got so excited. We started taking the assembly to different sections of the state to introduce people to it, because nobody had any money to bring members to the meetings. We didn't have budgets, and we did everything out of our own pockets. We teamed up with AA people when they went to their meetings and set our meetings at the same time they had theirs, so we'd have transportation. So we can be grateful for them, but we needed to separate ourselves from them because we are separate entities. We have entirely different focuses for being, for coming into being. We are an outside enterprise to them, and they're an outside enterprise to us, but we weren't doing it that way back then. Goodness, they had us on their committees, and when they had joint meetings or socials or that sort of thing, we were doing their secretarial work and their kitchen work. They knew who to call on. But we had to begin to go our separate ways and get our own identity. And of course, literature, as it began to be published, made that possible. The study of the traditions made that possible. But we had workshops at assembly level that made that possible. We started some public information out of assembly. We had that going throughout the state. And so we grew, but we could not have grown if we hadn't have worked together. This is why service work is so important. This is why we need to have volunteers in our own groups to man up and be willing to do whatever is necessary. And again, I will be quick to tell you that service was I think I have had more recovery from being in service than any other way. Incidentally, that person that was on that TV show that came to Roanoke, she came from Texas. She became my sponsor. She's the first person I ever ran into that had worked the steps. And so I went to work. She had me working the steps right away. And that changed my life. And then we ended up going to a conference together. She from West Texas and me from Virginia. So we had an interesting life together. And I think I'm going to let the other girls pick up here because they have more information maybe than I do. Because they've been here a long time too, and they're beautiful people. But I thank you very much for listening, and if you have any questions, I'll take those later.